Blog Talk Radio.
Hits podcast edition. I am your host, Derek Flex Felix, and this is a special podcast on the big events of Sunday, big sports happenings. A couple of big games going on, one in the NBA, and the first game of the Eastern Conference Finals, won by the Boston Celtics, 108-83, very easy win, stunningly, against the Cleveland Cavaliers, a game that they were able to dominate, and another surprise, Boston Capitals in the NHL Eastern Conference Final Game 2, backing up their game one performance by dominating the Lightning 6-2 to go up 2-0. So you got a couple of interesting things happening, a couple of surprises, I guess you could say, although I did think the Celtics had a shot in this series. So we're going to start with the NBA, and then we'll get to the what's going on with the Caps, maybe whether or not it might be their year for the Redskins. We'll do a little bit on Luis Severino, who is one of the best pitchers in baseball as well. We'll try to get to that later. All right, so let's start with the Game 1, a game on Mother's Day seen on ABC. If you weren't busy, I wasn't. A game that the Celtics controlled from the start, the very start. I mean, they did fall behind by 3 points pretty early. But they went from a 6-3 deficit or a 3-point deficit to scoring, I think, the next, like, 14 unanswered to go up 17-6. And they never looked back after that. And they really dominated the Cleveland Cavaliers in Game 1. And what came to fruition in this game was the Celtics' youth, their athleticism, and their speed, along with their skill. They can create a lot of matchup problems for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and that's what we saw in this first game. Granted, it was the first game, but the Celtics came out and they backed it up on their own home court at TD Garden, and they played like dynamite, and the Cavs had no answer for the Celtics. At one point, the Celtics outscored the Cavs 24-2 in the first quarter, and it was very uncompetitive. It just got away from the Cavs, and there were a couple takeaways. Number one, I really like how the Celtics defended the Cavs. They did not allow the Cavs to get open, wide open, uncontested threes. And we know how important it is for the Cavs to make three-point shots. I mean, a lot of their shots were contested, and that was due to the Celtics players making sure that they rotated out, making sure that they called the switches, and having enough athleticism to get out and to that perimeter and guard. And it took the Cavs a while to make a three-point shot. They were out for the first quarter, and they took a lot of contested shots, so it wasn't a good quarter for them. And the Celtics were able to run out and do exactly what they wanted. So I think that the Celtics had a great strategy in Game 1. Brad Stevens has a reason why I think he is the best coach in basketball, and I think that his players executed it to perfection in this first game. They made it difficult on LeBron James. You have to make it a little tough on him. I guess the Raptors put up token resistance. LeBron had to work. He played 36 minutes. He did not shoot particularly well. He missed all five of his threes. None of them were really in sync. And he was out of sync offensively, 5 or 6 feet from the field. He only wound up with 15 points. Missed all five of his threes. Wound up with 9 assists, but 7 of those assists came in the first half, a competitive first half. And 7 rebounds, but he also turned it over 7 times. The Celtics put a lot of pressure on him. They defended him extremely well. And LeBron had a really rough game. How rough would you say? Well, he was a team worst minus 32. So when LeBron James was on the floor with for the Cavs, they were minus 32 with him. The next worst was a minus 17 by J.R. Smith. So LeBron really, really struggled in this game. And there really weren't a lot of positives. And Tristan Thompson, of course, came up with the best, played well, 8 points and 11 rebounds, a couple of offensive putbacks. Kevin Love, he did score inside a little more because he was able to make too many threes, only made one, but he did score 17 and made, went to the line 6 times, 8 rebounds. But what was the biggest positive that I could think of was probably the play of Jordan Clarkson and Rodney Hood. Well, especially Clarkson. Clarkson scored 10 points off the bench. I thought he was actually pretty good, but also scored 11 points off the bench. So both those guys played well. Nobody really else played well for this team. It was a rough game for J.R. Smith. Only 4 points, no threes. The Cavs as a team shot 4 of 26 from 3. So it's pretty tough. It's impossible for them to win when they're that bad offensively. The Celtics, as I said, they took advantage of LeBron turnovers. He turned over 7 times. Celtics had 14 points off his turnovers. And the Cavs were minus 32 with LeBron on the floor. A lot of this has to do with the Celtics. Highlights from the Celtics standpoint, they had 3 20-point scorers or more. The two best players, in my estimation, were Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown destroyed the Cavs in the first half, especially in the second quarter. He was just making everything. He was just beating them in transition with strong finishes. He was making 3-point shots, 3 out of 5 from downtown, 9 for 60 for the game, a game high 23 points for Jaylen Brown, the second year shooting guard. A terrific game for him. He also got to defend that LeBron a little bit, forced him into a turnover, where he just very athletic, 8 rebounds also. So this guy is a really good player. He's well put together and looks pretty healthy. Marcus Morris also played very well in this game. He got the start, and he got the start because he wanted a matchup with LeBron, and he made him work. And he also had a really good game, 21 points on 7 of 12 shooting. Just real strong, 3 3-pointers, wide open, 10 rebounds, an excellent game. Marcus Morris has been a key Celtic the whole year, and he played at that 4 position and did a real good job on a day where Terry Rozier did not have a good shooting game, only with 8 points, missed all 3 of his threes, but he did make sure he distributed the ball, 8 assists, 6 rebounds, so he did everything else well. And that's what you want from your point guard. Now, they didn't have the scoring game, but he did the other things. And that's the thing that makes the Celtics team very tough. They're not just relying on one guy. Jason Tatum, he came in red hot. He didn't have a great offensive game, but he came to life, wound up with the 16 points on 6 of 11 for shooting, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, plus 27. Plus 25 for Marcus Morris. You look up at them, and there were a lot of positives for the Celtics, whereas there were a lot of negatives for the Cavs. Marcus Smart is never going to blow you away. He's athletic. He's not a big scorer, but he plays defense. He does the little things well. 9 points off the bench. 6 assists. Grabs a few rebounds. He's an effort player. He's an effort player. He can post you up. He does a lot of effort things. Horford had a good game. Horford has been one of the stables on the Celtics roster. You know, he's the experienced guy. He's lost to LeBron four times, mostly with the Atlanta Hawks. And Al Horford, how did he do? He only missed two shots the whole game, 8 of 10 in the field in 27 minutes with 20 points. Two wide open threes, six assists. Horford has always been a very versatile center, and he showed it again yesterday. The Celts just were well prepared for this game. They took advantage of matchups. They took advantage of turnovers. They ran circles around the Cavs, who aren't the best defensive team, and they used their speed. And that's like their biggest edge. You know, the faster the pace, the better it's going to be for the Boston Celtics. So the Cavs, what they want to do is they want to slow it down. They want to slow it down and let LeBron control the tempo, do some post-ups, and do a lot of other things and try to set up teammates. They couldn't get anything really going. They got it down to was the closest they got was 14 points. They finished third quarter pretty strong. Jeff Green, the former Celtics, made a shot at the buzzer to cut it to 14. They cut a 28-point lead to 14. So how did the Celtics respond? It scored like the first 7 or 9 points, put it right back up, blew it back up to 23. And that was the game. The game was over, basically. And they run away with it and win game one. A terrific game by the Boston Celtics. And game two is coming up on Tuesday. So Tuesday night on ESPN. So that will be game two. Game one on TNT Monday night should be a dandy between the Houston Rockets, the host Houston Rockets, against the Golden State Warriors for their champs. Some great matchups there. So that should be fun to watch. But, you know, just getting back to this game, Celtics were just much better, and their speed is going to give the Cavs problems. This is why I thought it could be a series. Now we're going to find out about game two, how the Cavs respond. We expect the Cavs to respond well, especially with LeBron James, the leader, Kevin Love. I'm sure they'll shoot better than they did in game one. So there will be some adjustments for Tyronn Lue and for LeBron. And my friend, Canamus, who's a huge Celtics fan, said it's really, she's talked about how important it'll be to get that game two against the Cavs, put them in a hole. And I definitely agree. If they could find that way to get that game two, put the Cavs in that also a hole, create some doubt, especially after winning so comfortably, 108-83, a blowout win for the Boston Celtics. So that's a ball on that. Now, let's get to the NHL. I'll tell you, the Cavs are looking, they continue to impress. I didn't see a good chunk of this, but I was able to catch enough of the highlights, and then I watched the third period, and watched the end of the second and watched the third, and the Cavs are just very impressive. I thought the Lightning would be the better team. So far, it's not at all the case. And why is it not the case? Because there's something about this Cavs team. They seem to have just unbelievable chemistry, and that's why they're up 2 games to none. They win comfortably, defeating the Lightning 6-2, scoring the last 5 goals, 5 unanswered, in Tampa Bay. And one thing that stands out is this even strength play, 5-on-5. In 6 periods, the Tampa Lightning have scored only once at even strength. That's amazing. And the Capitals, they're the team that's controlling play at 5-on-5. They're the team that's forcing mistakes. They're the team that's checking hard. They're outworking the Lightning. Same way they outwork the Pittsburgh Penguins. And it's not just the Ovechkin line with Kuznetsov and Tom Wilson, the annoying Tom Wilson, who scored on a redirect 28 seconds into the game to set the tone on one of those deflections. He is an important player, and I said he was an important player. He's an X factor, as well as he stays within the realm and doesn't lose his mind because he can throw hits. But it's the other lines. It's Larzo, or it's guys like TJ Oshie. It's guys like even Alex Chason and Devontae Stefanelli and Jay Beagle. I mean, they're getting contributions all over the place. Brett Connolly, remember him? The goal set before the first round pick, the goal set Brett Connolly is scoring goals and contributing. They're getting contributions from everybody. And no, there's still no Nick Backstrom, and there's no reason to put Backstrom back in the lineup right now with how well Lars Eller is playing. Lars Eller has taken over that role, centering that second line, and he's been unbelievable. How good was Lars Eller in this game? How about a goal and two assists? And just terrific, outstanding performance by him. How dominant is the top line with, well, let's just put it this way, also Vetchkin with his 10th goal. He continues to score goals, finishing off a 2-on-1 with Kuznetsov. Also had an assist, and he's playing terrific. And Kuznetsov's just been unbelievable. He's a monster. A goal and two more assists for the hero of the conference semifinal, when he beat the Penguins and eliminated the Pens in overtime. And he just continues to be in beast mode. John Carlson, two assists in this game, and a Caps record now. Caps franchise record. Most points by a Caps defenseman in NHL playoffs. He's up to, I believe, it's 13 points. So he's now passed Kevin Hatcher. He surpassed Kevin Hatcher and Scott Stevens. And he's up to 13 for the playoffs with two assists. And they just get a contribution from everybody. And that's what you have to like about this roster. They had a couple of tough calls going against them, in particular the second call on TJ Oshie. That was not a penalty. They thought it was a penalty for hard sticking. He didn't touch Nick Verhaeghen. It was the puck that touched him. Wilson had a goaltender interference going against him before the interference. It should have been a penalty on the Lightning for a puck. But he got the goaltender interference. The Lightning were able to capitalize and tie the game up, right on point. It was been one of the few Lightning forwards that's been visible. And scores about a rebound, Stamkos. And the Lightning took advantage of a terrible call on the high stick on Oshie, where he did not touch him, didn't touch him, but a beautiful setup, Kucherov to a Stamkos safe setup as the first, and the Lightning had it going their way. They had the 2-1 lead. They took advantage of some referee mistakes to have that 2-1 lead, but it was the Caps. It was the Caps that responded. You know, a lot of teams could have been very frustrated by those calls. How did the Caps handle it? They handled the adversity very well. A huge mistake early in the second period by former Rangers JT Miller and Ryan McDonough. And this has been part of the problem with Lightning, is that they're not always taking shots when they have the opportunity. Kucherov even passed on a shot where he overpassed the Stamkos, but he had a wide open chance or later in the game. And in this one case, JT Miller, who sometimes overstick handles, likes to make plays with the puck. He plays on that top line. He tried a cute pass that didn't work. It took a weird deflection and back pass, and it trapped Ryan McDonough, and it turned into a 3-on-1 for the Caps. And Carlson to Alex Chiasson, and Chiasson set it right across for Devontae Smith-Pelly, who buried home his third of the full season at 250. The only defenseman back was Mikhail Sergachev. Sergachev is a very good offensive defenseman, but John Cooper packed and had him in the top four, and that was a mistake. He shouldn't have been in the top four. That was a mistake. I don't understand what he was thinking. He's been taken to sleep so far by Barry Trotz, and I have to give Barry Trotz a lot of credit. Yeah, I gave him a lot of shit, and we all did. We all gave him a lot of crap. A lot of people on Twitter did. We did one of his. I mean, a lot. He's done an unbelievable job. He did a great job of helping shut down the Pens in the last two games, finally beat the Pens and get to this round, and he's doing a great job so far in this series. It helps that Braden Holtby is playing unbelievable so far, and Andrei Vasilevsky is not. So that's part of it as well. But that goal was a huge goal. It tied the game at 2. The rest of the period, it was really about the end of the period. This is where everything just changed. 2 goals scored in less than a minute, 59 seconds apart. Lars Eller got got the first one from Jacob Vrana. With 1:02 left, he's able to score down low on a good setup. And then a penalty, another one of those penalties that you just don't want to take. You can't take it. You can't take a penalty late. And this time it was Vasilevsky who got called for tripping. And he tripped up Berakowski, Andrei Berakowski, with 10 seconds left. And this was very similar to game one, where Kucherov had his goal taken off the block for a two-buddy men on the ice goal, which would have made it 1-1. And then the two-buddy men on the ice was being served, and eventually scored off a one-timer in the final, 6 seconds. And this time, it was Kuznetsov burying one. A play where there wasn't a lot of time left. There really wasn't. And Ovechkin made the play. He makes the pass across. Colburn did a terrible job there, allowing him to make the pass. You got to take the pass away there. McDonough was a little late on the coverage in front. Kuznetsov's able to score, able to get the goal. Actually, it was Kuznetsov that made the pass, That's right, it was Kuznetsov in the corner. He only had one play. He needed to get the puck across. He tried to get it across to Lars Eller or Ovechkin. The puck wound up deflecting off a bolt, and it turned into a power play goal. And that was a bad job by Culver. He didn't close out. You got to close out there. You can't give him the option to throw the puck towards you that. And just like that, it went from being a tie game at 2-2 to 4-2. Eller from Vrana and Kuznetsov from Ovechkin and Eller. So those two goals were huge, and Lightning never really recovered. I might have changed goalies at that point, but they didn't. They stayed with Vasilevsky, and it didn't really matter. But Lightning just made all sorts of mistakes. Colburn was the victim again. He got trapped trying to pinch in. He's your sixth defenseman, and he's trying to pinch in. He gets caught on the pinch. And another odd man, Russ Wilson, forced the turnover at the blue. And then it's Kuznetsov, 2-on-1, Ovi. And he just waits and waits. And Strahlman does the full dive, which I don't really like, because it takes you out of the play. Strahlman has not looked good at all this whole playoffs. He looks like he's lost a couple of steps, Anton Strahlman. He took himself right out of the play. Kuznetsov slides it across to Ovechkin, and he buries it just inside that short side post, top shelf, past Vasilevsky for his 10th. And at that point, it was 5-2. He could have just shut it off right there. Brett Connolly with the finishing touches, a nice finish off another Lars Eller pass and forecheck, and Connolly able to get a quick shot in the slot that beats Vasilevsky, and that went at 6-2, and turned it off right there. And it was all Caps. And what does it have to do with? They may not have as much talent as they did in previous years. What I see is that they just have a harder work ethic. They work harder. They work stronger. And more committed, this team. And they're getting the goaltending from Holtby. Holtby faced 35 shots, and he got 33 of them, and the only two were power play goals. So Holtby continues to play extremely well. Ever since he came in against Columbus and won those four straight games, and then he went 4-2 against the Pens. Now he's 2-1 against the Lightning. He's having a great run, is Brandon Holtby. And it's all coming to fruition for the Caps right now. Everybody is just stepping up their game. Ovechkin's never played better than he's played in these playoffs. And everybody questioned, Ovechkin's a choker. Well, he always had good playoff numbers. He's not a choker. And he's proven it. So far in the playoffs this year, Mr. Holtby is 10-3 in 13 games with a 204 GAA and 926 save percentage. He has really come through. He's definitely emerged one of the candidates. Ovechkin. Let's talk about Alex Ovechkin with a goal and an assist, up to 10 goals so far. They've got 10 goals. He's got 9 assists. He's got 19 points. He's been a leader, and it's not just the offense, not just the passing, like we sort of said, it's not the finishing, not just the finishing. He's coming back defensively. He's making plays. He made the play to force, actually, he forced the turnover that led to that goal, that huge goal. So he's doing everything. And Kuznetsov, I told you about this guy. I think he's a star player, and he's just a breakout guy. 8 goals, 11 assists, 19 points, and doing this without Backstrom. And this is all Kuznetsov's done. This is Kuznetsov's last. Let's do his last 4 games. His last 4 games are all kept wins. So in game five. He had a goal and 2 assists in game 5 against the Caps. I guess the Penguins. Game goal and 2 assists. May 7th. Overtime winner. Beautiful deep backhand tuck for him. OT winner there. 2 assists in game number 1 against the Lightning. And 3 more points against the Lightning in game 2. So, 3, 5, 6, 9 points in his last 4 games. And he's just doing it all. He's doing it all. He's stepping up. And this is about Nicholas Backstrom. It's about Lars Eller. It's about Lars Eller. And Lars Eller's been pretty terrific. You know, he's always been an underrated performer. Well, in this playoffs, 5 goals, 6 assists from Lars Eller. He's just performing excellently. A goal and an assist in game 5 against the Pittsburgh Penguins, +3. Scored a big goal against the Lightning in game 1, and 3 more points in game 2 against the Lightning again, and one of the best players, if not the best. So that's 6 points in the last 4 games for Lars Eller, a guy that was a first round pick with St. Louis, a guy that they stole from the Montreal Canadiens, and a guy who has been a very good performer for the Caps without Nick Backstrom. Now for the Lightning, what's wrong with the Lightning? Well, their best players aren't showing up. Strada was -3 in this game. McDonough had a terrible game. He was -3. Brian Callahan, -2. You know, the effort was there. Kubits, -2. JT Miller, -2 with that terrible turnover that trapped his teammate. About that point, Johnson, Palat line. Only Braden Point is putting up numbers. He's got a goal and an assist, -1. Danko scored again his 4th goal in his last 5. He had a goal and an assist, but he was -2 at even strength. So there's a lot of negatives going on. Kucherov's been taking some bad penalties. He was -2 just with the primary of Danko's power play goal. Hedman, -1. He hasn't really played that great either. So there's just a lot of negatives when you look at the Lightning so far. Eskoski, another very tough game for him. I'm not really going to pin this all on him. I don't think his team has played that well. I think John Cooper said it best in the post game. He said that, you know, this is not how they got to 113 points in the regular season. They played fast. He feels like they're playing too tentative. And that's not how the Lightning play. The Lightning have been too tentative. They're passing up shots. And they're kind of playing like they're playing a little bit like, shall we say, the AV Rangers. Yeah, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying that, but it's true. They've been a little tentative. You can't have your best player passing up shots. And when I say shots, wide open shots, too. I mean, these aren't even, you know, these are shots that they should be taking. They should be taking it hard to the net. They should be making it a little tough and ballsy. They're not so far. And that's the disappointing part. Because they can play a lot better than how they are so far. So that is a big part of why they have struggled so far in this series. Is it over? I mean, I guess the only way to find out is how the Lightning gonna respond when they hit DC for game 3. That's how we find out. We don't know how they'll respond.
I don't know how the Lightning were going to come out. What Lightning team would say? I mean, I thought for sure the Lightning would respond and get a W and even up the series. They weren't even close. They weren't even close. And they only have one even strength goal so far. They're just not getting the performances that you're used to seeing. Defense is struggling. A lot of this has to do with the Caps. Their forecheck is very good. They finish hits. I think that we took them a little lightly. And it happens sometimes. So the Lightning certainly have enough firepower. They have enough. You know, I'm not just talking about the quote-unquote star guys that get it done. Stamkos, Kucherov. Kucherov could take over a game, so it's possible. The new triplets with Braden Point, Tyler Johnson, and Andre Palat have been pretty quiet. Don't forget about Alex Killorn either on that third line with Yanni, Gore, and Cirelli. So Hedman hasn't really had the impact that we thought he would have. So there's plenty of guys the ability to get them back in the series. What do I think needs to happen? Well, Cooper's not going to go. He's not going to Louis Domingue. He's sticking with Vasilevskiy, just based on what we heard in the post game. So he obviously needs a good start. I think that I'm sure the Cats will kind of try to come out, especially with the crowd on their side. So, Vasilevskiy will be a real key. He'll have to be a real factor early on. He'll have to withstand some of that pressure. The Lightning are going to need to score early, get the jump. But they're going to have to play a lot better 5-on-5. If they can play better 5-on-5, then they give themselves a chance. So we'll see. Is it over? I mean, they looked mentally drained. But, I watched the post game. They understand what's going on. They understand what they're going to have to do. So I'm not going to write them off yet. Fat Lady will start warming up if they do not win on Tuesday in Washington, D.C. That's what we'll say about that game. All right. So that's where we'll stand. Should Cooper make any changes to his line? Should he tinker for one? Should he move up Braden Point to the top line? Maybe move Miller down to the second line? It's possible. I definitely think he made some mistakes with his defense pairs. I think that they're most effective. And I understand he was worried about the speed by not having Girardi play with McDonough. But McDonough and Girardi were very effective in the last series. And I think McDonough has to play with Girardi, and I think that Hedman has to play with Stralman. And you have to have Sergachev on your third pair with Colburn, who really struggled yesterday. But everybody's struggling. Should they try anything else? Call. They're not gonna. I don't think they're going to insert any players that were scratched. They don't really have any guys that would come in. I don't think Corey Conacher's coming in. He'd be like the first option. I think that they have the guys that they want. He could make some line adjustments. I think he needs to adjust in terms of the matchups. I think going away from using his faster second line with Johnson, with Braden Point, and with Palat against the Ovechkin line was a huge miscalculation, because you can't have Paquette, Callahan, and Kunitz against the Ovechkin line. They're not fast enough, and they wound up -2. So he has to use his second line and hope they turn it around. I don't think he wants Stamkos' unit going head to head against Ovechkin. I don't think that'd be a mistake. But Lars Eller is doing a great job so far. Dmitry Orlov doesn't get enough credit for how good a defenseman he is. Orlov is doing a great job so far, along with Carlson, who continues to put up the points. Even the slower Brooks Orbeck is doing a real good job. He was +2 in 17-plus minutes of action. Jay Beagle, very underrated performer for the Caps. They seem to have a lot of these guys. Chandler Stephenson plays a real good penalty kill role. He's filled in nicely, playing some center as well, the rookie. And Matt Niskanen is the other key defenseman. He plays a lot of big minutes as well. So maybe we underestimated. We underestimated the Caps, and you know, maybe it is their year. Maybe it's time for Ovechkin to win one. We'll see. And if they do get there, I expect it to be Winnipeg. We'll see what happens. Winnipeg's got game two against the Vegas Golden Knights. It was Vegas who lost the first game 4-2. Winnipeg overwhelmed them in the first period, took the 3-0 lead. They did make it 3-1, the Golden Knights. They didn't back off. And that's the one thing I'll say. They're not going to back down. They lose is going to be because they're outskilled and they're out-physical. It's not going to be about being out-willed. Winnipeg's got the most talent. So it's basically pick your poison. My advice to the Golden Knights for game two on Monday night, stay out of the penalty box. You want to win, you want a chance, you got to stay out of the penalty box. Avoid the penalty box at all costs because that's going to be your best chance. You can't take penalties against Winnipeg. They will absolutely kill you. The same way the Lightning and the Caps don't want to take penalties against each other. But Winnipeg, you can't. It's pick your poison. You want to take away Mark Scheifele, then Patrick Laine can get open. You want to take away Scheifele, or you want to take away Laine, then Scheifele, you have to worry about Scheifele. You want to take those two away, then Buffon could beat you. There's a lot of guys that could beat you. Blake Wheeler. Ehlers still doesn't have a goal, so I think Ehlers might get on the board later tonight. So, and the Caps and Lightning, that is game two on Tuesday. All right, so we've done basketball, we've done hockey. Do more in terms of the baskets. In terms of, but there's still time. There's still time. I mean, but let's see what happens with game one and just the unbelievable matchup between the Rockets and the Warriors, the matchup everybody's been waiting for. And it should be a lot of fun to see. So, you know, get your popcorn ready, as Terrell Owens would say, and I'm glad he's going to the Hall of Fame finally, where you got Chris Paul, you got Stephen Curry, you got James Harden, you got Klay Thompson, you've got Kevin Durant. I don't know who guards Kevin Durant, whether it's Trevor Ariza or it's, I don't know. I don't know who's going to guard him. You've got Dre Green, you've got Clint Capella, You've got some great matchups overall. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. So I'm expecting it to be exciting. I'm expecting the quarters to be high-flying, and I'm expecting there to be runs back and forth, and I'm expecting it to be a long series. So it should be a lot of fun to watch. I'm sure JPG or JP Benedict is looking forward to it. Final thing, Luis Severino won his sixth game yesterday for the Yankees. He could have won the seventh game if the Yankees didn't blow it last week, a game where he struck out 11, but Mookie Betts tied it up. Again, the Yankees still pulled out and won. Severino's one of the best pitchers in the game already. Last year, he finished third for the Cy Young voting, and he's picking up right where he left off. He is a terrific pitcher. Has that fastball that can top out in the mid to high 90s. He can mix in that curve. He's got three pitches that he can really work. Able to win on Mother's Day. He didn't have his best stuff, but won six innings against Oakland, only gave up a run. And he continues to be a terrific, you know, starting pitcher. Also, don't forget he had a complete game as well. The only complete game that the Yankees started is a Pat. And these days, complete games are a lot harder. It's rare that you see guys go for complete games. But there have been a couple of no-hitters already. James Paxton with one. So, but when you look at Severino, you look at the body of work, and you look at where he is, he's right in the upper echelon with as far as the most wins in the last, last year plus. He's right there with Max Scherzer, with Chris Sale. So he's doing a lot of things right. is Luis Severino. 7 strikeouts in the 6 innings of work, 1 earned run, and 2 walks, and he's got a 2.14 ERA. I had JPG lay down $25 on Severino to win the AL Cy Young. The other 25, his other half, is on Bryce Harper to win the NL MVP. Except he's going to be in the discussion. It's going to be a tight race. You've got Chris Sale. You've got, obviously, a rejuvenated Verlander who continues to throw lights out. Gerrit Cole's off to a ridiculous start with the Astros. I don't know what the heck they're doing over there, but it seems like everybody on the Astros staff, just like all of a sudden, they just turn into, like, Nolan Ryan or Mike Scott, since 1986. So, it's very odd what's going on there. But Severino is definitely one of the best pitchers in the sport. Charlie Morton, too. That's the other guy from the Astros. You've got Corey Kluber from the Indians, Carlos Carrasco. So I'm just throwing out the names of the guys who are going to be in the mix for this award. So it's going to be fun to follow, see who will actually wind up winning the award. Severino's going to be right there. He definitely is. Sevy is very young, too. That's the other thing. He's 24 years old. He's got the body of work. He's 6-1 so far in the 9 games. He could have 7 or 8 wins already. 2.14, 59 innings, 70 strikeouts, 90.90 whip. He continues to get better all the time. So, I think sooner rather than later, the Yankees are going to lock up Severino, get him on a really good contract so they don't have to overpay him. That would definitely be my advice. He really knows how to get things done. He had the complete game against the Astros with the 10 strikeouts, struck out 11 against the Red Sox. Was charged the second run against the Red Sox because Betts got the big hit. But terrific. He's just terrific right now to watch. And a lot of really good things to see from a pitcher that just continues to get better. Last year he won 14 games in his basically his second full year, even though 2016 it was 22 games, he only got 11 starts, got moved to the bullpen. And then this is his second full year, at least as a full-time starter. He was a starter in his rookie year and showed some flashes. Came back to the pack in 2016, struggled mightily until moved to the bullpen. Last year, he threw 193 innings, 150 hits, won 14 games in 31 starts, had 230 strikeouts against 51 walks, only allowed 6 home runs. Actually, no, it was 21 home runs. Yeah, I was going to say a very low number to give up. He's a young pitcher, so he's progressed. The progression is coming. Opponents so far are batting only 185 against him, and he's only allowed 2 home runs so far. Just that very bad. They got Fenway, 59 innings, 39 hits, and the 14 walks of 70 Ks. So Severino, how good can he be? He's definitely up there in terms of some of the best starters in baseball. Who do you want to put ahead of him? Well, obviously, I think you would put Dollar Max, Max Scherzer. He is the best pitcher right now in the game, in the sport, with the Cy Youngs, and the fact that he could go 8 or 9 every time out. So you're putting him ahead. You could put Corey Kluber in there as well with the Cy Youngs. I put him definitely ahead. Clayton Kershaw has to still be ahead of him. Even though Kershaw is not going to always go as far or as deep into games where he used to be able to go 8, 9 innings, he's still a just dominant starter. So these are the kind of guys now that you could put Severino against. So, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing what he's been able to come through. I probably would put Chris Sale ahead of Severino because he's a little more established at this point. So I'll put Sale ahead as well. Cubs starters. Is he better than John Lester? Yeah, John Lester will not have the number. Probably won't finish with the stats of a Severino, But Lester's certainly a guy who could take that ball every fifth day and get the job done. Jake Arrieta used to be in the conversation. He's pitched pretty well so far for the Phillies. They did blow the game to the Mets, but they came back and won. They took the other game after the rainout on Saturday, a game where Grom, a guy that I like a lot, came back prematurely. It rained, and he only went one inning, throwing 45 pitches and walked the bases loaded. My question to the Mets is, why would you even have him throw, come back in a game where you had rain? Like, what were you expecting to accomplish there? So, these are all good questions. Syndergaard, you want to put Syndergaard ahead of Severino? Syndergaard's having problems pitching deep into games. I think Syndergaard's got electric stuff. So, I don't know. DeGrom, I like DeGrom a lot. It just depends on how we can come back from it. So, but these are the kind of pitchers you're putting ahead of him. Verlander, he's older, but if he's going to pitch lights out like this, then he's ahead of Seve as well. Seve's a top 10. I think Seve's definitely a top 10 guy at this point. So that is high praise right there for Luis Severino. The Yankees able to win the final two games against the Oakland Athletics. They're able to take the final two games. They win 6-2, and they continue to roll on. Tied for first place right now. Giancarlo Stanton had a big game. 4-4 at the stadium. He hit a 10th home run, so he's coming. He's coming along, Giancarlo. Don't forget Giancarlo had that 2-home run game at Fenway. Or not at Fenway. Actually at the stadium in a win. So he's coming. He's slowly coming. He's got 10 home runs, up to 26 RBIs. The Judge, he had two more RBIs. So, I mean, a lot of things are going pretty well for the Yankees. Even with Gregorius, 0-4 again, and only one hit in his last 30, I think it's like 35 or 37 at-bats. Sanchez not hitting for average, but certainly has the power of the 10 home runs as well. Guardy had two hits, so Guardy's starting to come out of it. Gregorius, he'll come out of it eventually. Hicks, he knocked in two runs. He's hopefully a home run game. Only hitting 215, but he's coming around. Austin's hitting 222, so he hasn't really been hitting since he came back. So, the question is, when do you fit Greg Bird back in to the lineup? Torres played yesterday. He spelled Glaber and got one hit. And he's hitting 340. And Andujar, two more hits for Miggy. And when does Brandon Drury come back? He had a grand slam and an assignment. So these are all really good questions for the New York Yankees, who are continuing to win ball games. And it's going to be very interesting. It's going to be an interesting race to see what happens between the Yankees and the Red Sox probably all year. That's going to do it for this podcast edition. I am Derek Felix of the Hard Hits Network. Tune in to more future podcasts. Make sure you check out what should be two great games, but especially I think that NBA Western Conference Finals, Game 1. And you've got the Houston Rockets hosting the Golden State Warriors, a 9 o'clock game on TNT. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. So we'll try to break it all down in between my online school. I have online school tomorrow, so I'll have time late to do a little breakdown before I go to bed because I have work the next day. And we'll do some more on the NHL, see what happens with Winnipeg and Las Vegas in Game 2, and with some more baseball stuff as well. All right, that's going to do it for the Hard Hits Network. I am Derek Fox Felix, and make sure you tune in to future podcasts. Have a great night, everybody. Good night.